From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, hauntings, horrors, and dancing with the dead. That's what we're going to talk about. Here's what's happening. A story you will find at coasttocoastam.com on our highlights reel. It is as strange as they come, folks. Over the last 9 years, a very strange mystery has unfolded in the Pacific Northwest as an amazing 16 severed feet have washed ashore, and all of them were wearing shoes. I'm not kidding here. It began in 2007 when a pair of right feet were found 6 days apart on a beach in British Columbia, followed by five more feet washing ashore in 2008. Now, in the ensuing years, an additional 9 feet, including one this week, were added to the mysterious haul, spawning considerable debate over the source of the severed limbs. Now, some have suggested that they are the product of a serial killer, or perhaps the victims of human trafficking. Other theories center around passengers of missing planes or ships lost near the Pacific Ocean. Experts contend that there is nothing particularly strange about feet becoming dislodged from dead bodies due to tidal forces. But that's of little reassurance as the mystery limbs continue to wash ashore. Investigators have been able to track some of them back to their original owners and determine that their demise was suicide or natural causes. However, an overwhelming amount of lost limbs remain unaccounted for. In oddities, such as the fact that most of them are right feet, all of them wear shoes, continue to vex authorities. It's unlikely that the exact origins of all of the remaining feet will be identified. But at this point, residents of the area would probably just settle for having them stop washing ashore on their beaches. Isn't that weird? The man who held the Guinness World Record for the longest surviving heart transplant patient has died 33 years after his life-saving operation. John McCafferty, 73 years old, underwent the transplant on October 20th, 1982, at a hospital in West London. He was 39 at the time. Wow. Kim Jong-un is making a habit of killing off his most senior military leaders, and he thinks that will keep them in line, but it could be making some very powerful enemies. Kim's increasing willingness to execute some of the most senior figures in his military might suggest that the young leader is struggling to impose control. Analysts are beginning to wonder how much more the military will put up with this. In a moment, Charles R. Smith joins us. We'll talk about North Korea and some other issues. Major world powers have agreed to a ceasefire and to the delivery of immediate aid in Syria. Now, I wonder if anybody has told ISIS that. Let's check in with Jerry Corsi from WND.com. Jerry, a ceasefire in Syria, is that going to hold up?
I doubt it, George. It doesn't seem to be very credible. I mean, the bombing that Russia has done, I think, is aimed not only gaining hold of Aleppo, but also, I think, destabilizing the EU. Russia has a goal of creating as many refugees as possible. They're flooding through Turkey into Greece, into the EU. And with the agreement in the EU that you can go from any country to any country without a passport, the pressure of these refugees over time is going to put tremendous pressure on the EU holding together. So I don't think Russia has any motivation really to stop the attacks in Syria. It may be a temporary ceasefire, but I doubt if it's going to last.
Yeah, Jerry, I saw pictures from Aleppo, Syria. Devastating. You know, I had some family members who were from there a long time ago. As a matter of fact, a lot of our family records are in a Christian church in Aleppo, if that church is still standing. But it's really sad, isn't it?
It's devastating. I mean, the destruction that's been done in Damascus and in Syria in general is horrifying. I mean, it's hard to imagine how anybody can still be living in places like Aleppo. The buildings are all bombed out. The town and large parts of Syria are just devastated. And we're getting, I think, probably this spring and summer, you're going to see millions of refugees pouring out of Syria, trying to get into the EU. Mm-hmm. This is a horrendous humanitarian
unbelievable
disaster. Yeah, and I don't think it's going to stop, George. I don't see an end to the violence, even if there's a temporary ceasefire.
Jerry, give me your reaction to the Democratic and Republican presidential runoff so far.
Well, I think they're, you know, very interesting contests. Hillary Clinton has got to face the issue of whether or not she's going to be indicted. The FBI investigation and the leaks coming from it certainly suggests that the FBI is seriously looking at her emails, and now the investigation is spilling over into the Clinton Foundation. Donald Trump seems to be doing a very strong job in winning, not only in New Hampshire, but it looks like he's very strong in the polls in South Carolina. Both are still wide open. There's too few delegates yet committed. But Donald Trump, if he wins in South Carolina in the next few primaries, may be unstoppable. And I think the only thing that will stop Hillary Clinton is possibly an indictment mm-hmm. By the FBI, or a threat of an indictment, you know, coming forward. Maybe Loretta Lynch will not act on it as Attorney General, but if the FBI wants to indict, that's going to put a serious crimp in her presidential chances.
All right. Thank you, Jerry. Keep in touch. Jerry Corsi, of course, writes for WND.com, also a noted author, including Atomic Iran. Great book. The four remaining holdouts of that armed protest group that occupied a federal wildlife refuge in Oregon for the past 41 days has turned themselves in peacefully. But the end of the standoff did not come without a little drama. After the first three protesters surrendered to authorities, the last occupier, a guy by the name of David Fry, initially resisted. He finally turned himself in. Everybody's okay. But he had said on a live audio webcast that he was feeling suicidal and he'd like to die a free man, but he's okay now. Global stock markets are on their shakiest footing in years. Investors fleeing stocks, running to safe havens like gold and silver today, they exploded. Scientists are claiming a stunning discovery to their quest to fully understand gravity. This makes Albert Einstein's 100-year-old talk about relativity, his theory about relativity, he was perfectly right. He didn't have a computer. He just worked out of his mathematical head. But they have observed the warping of space-time generated by the collision of two black holes more than a billion light years from Earth. Now, the international team says the first detection of these gravitational waves will usher in a new era for astronomy. And what it is like, and as physicist Ron Mallett has talked about on our show before as he talked about time travel, just picture the universe as a large rubber sheet, and in the middle of it is a bowling ball. So if you put little peas or balls on the outside of this large sheet, they kind of get pulled right in where the bowling ball is sagging. That's what the universe is like. That's what's happening to gravity. Now, we'll have physicists on the show in the future to discuss this a little bit better than I can do for you. But it truly, I think, will change propulsion, rocket ship propulsion, time travel. It's got all kinds of ramifications. Speaking of ramifications, let's check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center with his weekly update for us. What do you got, Peter?
Well, a good evening to you, George, and to the Coast listeners. My, what a week it has been. It's been fascinating taking reports all week long, and I've got some doozies, some of the most interesting I've taken in a long time.
Super.
Give me the chills.
Love to hear them.
And you know, when I get the chills from a UFO report,
it's a great report.
It must be something unusual. And they have nothing to do with missing feet or track shoes.
Unbelievable story. That's up in your neck of the woods, too.
Yeah, isn't it? I've heard about that one for quite a while. It's a continuing problem.
What size shoe do you wear, by the way?
I'm not going to ever wear track shoes again.
No,
I swear
don't
it.
Do that.
I'd like to begin. I got four reports tonight.
Okay.
All of them fascinating. First one, briefly, a report that goes back to October of 2008. Two married couples were driving from Mono Lake in California down to Las Vegas on Highway 95. just got this report last weekend. Makes me believe that I may understand UFOs better than I understand my fellow man. But these four people were driving a very large RV down to Las Vegas, and the husband, one of the husbands was driving. He's a former employee of the Ministry of Defense in Australia, all four of them Australian adults. And the wife was navigating in the right seat. She was surprised that her husband started slowing down on the interstate for no particular reason that she could see, and he pulled off the interstate, and he pointed up, she writes, and a very nicely written report it is, points up, and he said, "Why can't we see the stars?" And they got out of the RV, and she writes that they were just chilled to see a very large gunmetal black triangle hovering directly above their RV. It's a fascinating report, a two-page report, again, very nicely written. I may even call these folks in Australia to confirm the report. But this object, this triangular object, started moving to the east towards Tonopah, or Nellis Air Base, and it suddenly accelerated. She said it was like warp speed. It accelerated, went over the mountains, and within seconds of its passing over the mountains, she describes, it was like lightning strikes on the other side of the mountain were visible, or perhaps ordnance being shot at it. It's hard to know. Very, very interesting report posted to our website. And the reason it makes me think I may understand UFOs better than humans is these people, all of them, had forgotten this incident until they saw a recent UFO program on television, decided to submit it. Second report comes from Colorado Springs. This is just a week ago, the 4th of February, just about the time Tom called me for my weekly update on the coast. A gentleman in Colorado Springs was suddenly awakened for no reason that he's aware of, and he was shocked to see that his bedroom was filled with red fog. And he tried to wake his wife. He couldn't even wake his dog. He was lying on the bed with them.
Jeez.
And he heard some buzzing out in front of their house. He walked to the front door, opened it, and was shocked to the roots of his soul to see a disc hovering about 50 feet in the air above their front yard.
Wow.
It scared the daylights out of him, George. And it, when I talked to him today, and I have to emphasize, he really convinced me that he was a very serious-minded, responsible-type person. He said he was getting goosebumps just going back to that incident on the 4th of February. Last two cases, briefly, sort of wide-area cases. This involves one you reported on yesterday about the launch of the Delta IV that went out of Vandenberg.
Vandenberg, sure.
On the 10th, just yesterday morning, I started receiving reports from all over the Pacific Northwest in California, Nevada, Idaho, about an event, a major event that had occurred at 0520 hours. And I assumed that all these people had a mistaken time in their reports because the rocket went out of Vandenberg, I believe I'm correct in saying at 0340 hours. And I invite people to read the reports. There's a very good graphic on our homepage from one of the witnesses. And finally, this morning, very major event from down in your neck of the woods, San Diego, Los Angeles, all over that area. People saw a blue-green fireball. Some of them report it lasted for up to 20 seconds, so probably not a meteor. But if anybody saw that object this morning on the 11th of February, I'd like them to submit a report. Just let us know where they were, what direction they were looking, and how the object passed across the sky, and we'll post those reports and talk about them next week.
All right, Peter, thank you. Peter's website, of course, is ufocenter.com. Just last week, North Korea launched a satellite. People a little concerned about that because they do have the capability of reaching now the western coast of the United States. And, of course, as you well know, they have nukes. And now we hear the story that Kim Jong-un has executed another senior military leader. How dangerous is this guy? Is North Korea more dangerous than the Middle East? That's just one of the topics we'll check in with Charles R. Smith about next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, our special guest for the next couple hours, Charles R. Smith. He is America's leading expert, I believe, on cyber technology, its implications for war, terrorism, privacy. He's also an expert on China, North Korea, South Korea. And Charles, so much to talk with you about. My gosh, I almost don't know where to start, but welcome back.
I appreciate it.
Okay, let's start with the missile launch of North Korea. Everybody's up in arms about this. Should they be?
Well, yes, actually. The demonstration is pretty clear. They put a reasonably good-sized payload into orbit, about 400 to almost 500 pounds worth, which is equivalent to, say, one of their smaller nuclear weapons. So it is a very clear demonstration that they could potentially deliver a nuclear weapon anywhere on the globe.
And, you know, I've been talking about protecting our power grid from not only a solar flare from the sun, but an EMP pulse attack, a detonation of a nuke high above the atmosphere that would sprinkle down on us. They're very close then to having the capability if they don't have it already.
Well, the North Korean nuclear weapons aren't quite as adept at producing EMP pulses as we are here in the West. They're actually more concerned for, you know, your classic blast effect and radiation. Of course, you know, their last nuclear test, they made the claim that it was an H-bomb. The reality is that it was probably a test of a very small but potent warhead, which could potentially be carried by a rocket such as this, or the ballistic missile equivalent of the UNRU, which is the Taipo Dong 2 missile system. So the whole point, I think, of the North Koreans' nuclear and ballistic missile programs are not necessarily aimed at a more sophisticated effort such as an EMP pulse, but more along the lines of your classic blunt edge, will vaporize most of Los Angeles and be done with it.
Well, that's just what we need to hear, Charles, especially under the tutelage of this whack job out there. Now, is that fair? Am I being unkind to the guy?
Well, let's put it this way. North Korea kind of reminds me of this song, Still Crazy After All These Years. Kim Jong-il,
the dad,
the predecessor, daddy, who died, was at least a little bit more, westernized. He kind of enjoyed his cars. He had a wonderful movie collection. He enjoyed dancing with Madeleine Albright, things like that. Kim Jong-un is more your classic 20-somethings paranoid. Even though he is now in his early 30s, he is relatively, let's say, skeptical of his power. And I think he's been demonstrating his capability not only on the international stage with the satellite launch and with the nuclear weapons tests, but of course also internally by executing generals and making sure that people know that he's actually in power. The problem that they're running into right now, remember, we are in the midst of the winter time in North Korea, and it's a particularly nasty one this year. The whole idea is that your population usually gets a little disgruntled during bad weather, especially if they're not very well fed.
Right.
Had to have good electricity and heat and things like that. So you have to kind of trot out these wonderful things. And, you know, it's a carrot and stick sort of routine. Hey, we've got big weapons and we're really good. And at the same time, on the other hand, oh, gee, one of these top generals just suddenly disappeared from the headlines and everyone knows that disappeared means he's pushing up daisies somewhere.
Now, eventually, and that's been the story on the internet all day today, these various blogs, he's going to tick off enough people within North Korea, generals, and they're going to say, we could be next. We got to stop this guy. Could there be a coup underway?
There is a possibility of that. The only problem is...
Hold on for a sec, Charles. My gosh, already at the bottom of the hour. We'll come back and talk about that. And welcome back to Coast, Charles R. Smith with us. Charles, we were talking about the possibility of a coup taking Kim Jong-un out. Are the generals brave enough to do that, or are they scared to death?
Well, actually, I think what we're encountering here is sort of a slow and grinding transition of power. Keep in mind that the DPRK military has more or less ruled the roost since Granddaddy
right.
came to power, because he was obviously, you know, a leading member and having led the guerrilla operations against the Japanese during World War II. What we're seeing now, on the other hand, is the rise of the Korean Workers' Party. Essentially, Kim is appointing members of the KWP into the military, and he seems to trust them more than the entrenched factions within the actual military itself,
mm-hmm.
which I think may have actually led to the assassination of General Ri. It appears that Ri probably had a, shall we say, a one-on-one, face-to-face conflict with a couple of KWP members during the February 2nd joint meeting. He had vented some opposition to KWP members being appointed into top-ranking military positions.
And that's all it takes with Kim. All you have to do is say, I don't agree, and he goes and gets you executed.
That's basically the whole point. Either that or fall asleep when he's attending something, and which is what happened.
And you don't wake up.
Minister.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, essentially, you know, it was considered an insult, and the retaliation was a nice public execution.
Well, what I'm hearing,
aircraft gun.
What I'm hearing too, Charles, is not only do they get the general, but they go back and get the general's family and the family's family, and they go back a couple generations. Is that true?
Absolutely.
Oh,
they're very thorough about these kinds of things. They don't want any sort of retaliation. So they feel that it's quite necessary to go so far as to extend any retribution. Many family members that do survive are actually imprisoned or put into workers' camps, and they may not survive those at all. So, you know, the real key here, I think, is what's happening is that UN is transitioning a lot of the economic power out of the military hands. One of the things that Daddy, Kim Jong-il, did was allow the military to create their own businesses, and that was quite profitable, especially to top-ranking military members. Well, UN has sort of reversed that process, following kind of in the footsteps of President Xi over in China, by de-emphasizing the military and transitioning a lot of those industrial resources out of their hands and into the hands of Worker Party loyal members. So that's also one of the mm-hmm. key issues here. We have to look behind the assassination of Ri and see, did he own something that maybe a KWP member actually wanted? And you could sort of say it's sort of a hostile takeover. You own a series of restaurants or movie theaters, and there's a politically connected insider, you resist his takeover of your businesses, and of course you risk a hostile takeover.
Isn't that what Putin does in Russia?
Very similar.
Yeah.
Very similar. So while a lot of people are actually speculating that this may be a indication that there might be some sort of assassination attempt against UN, I have a feeling that he's actually consolidating his power and maneuvering against a lot of the old guard. And this consolidation essentially is spreading the wealth into influential KWP members who are backing him. and he's allowing them to acquire extensive amounts of money, foreign capital reserves, investments, and things like that.
So he basically is trying to shift the wealth from the old establishment to people that he thinks will support him.
Absolutely. And I believe this also goes hand in hand with what we're seeing in their emphasis on nuclear weapons and long-range ballistic missiles. One of the features of ballistic missiles is, as far as the military goes, it's not really a tactical thing. It's not a tank. It's not an airplane. It's not a large army or group of paratroopers that a general can command. A ballistic missile with a warhead essentially is a very small unit, and it is generally commanded and run by military units that are essentially directly reporting to and loyal to the leadership, the Politburo, essentially. This, again, is very similar to mirrors the Chinese effort with the 2nd Artillery, which runs their ballistic missile programs. It's been renamed the Strategic Rocket Command. The whole idea is that the control of those, the warheads and the missiles, are actually in the hands of the political troops, not the line military folks. So essentially, they report directly to the leadership, and he views this as essentially taking the power away from the military in a conventional sense, but maintaining his power and prestige in an international and national context.
Now, this is where the sparks could fly, Charles. Are we going to permit Kim to continue doing what he's doing in terms of the military, the missiles, the nukes? Because is he capable of launching against us?
Oh, absolutely.
You have no doubt about that.
Unquestioned. He has a small stockpile, probably around 20 to 25 weapons at the moment. I would say probably between 5 and 10 of them are capable of being mounted on a rocket. The problem that they currently have with their longest range rockets, such as the Taipo Dong 2, or better known as the satellite carrier UNRWA, essentially is that these are level one ballistic missiles. They take a long time to set up. Liquid fueled, usually using liquid oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
So it can take hours, even days.
And satellites will probably detect that?
Yes. The problem is that he has a number of shorter range, intermediate range ballistic missiles, the Nodong class, that are quite capable of carrying nuclear weapons. Their warheads are around 1,100 pounds.
Would he use them on the South?
That's possible. It's also possible that Japan may be a target, which is the reason why the Japanese
wow.
are nervous.
Now, also, I'm a little confused over the relationship between China and North Korea, because even though I've always thought they were extremely close allies, every time we hear something about Korea's going to launch a missile, China publicly always says, no, we're opposed to this. So I don't get it.
Well, again, that's the public face, and then there's the private face. The former head of the Chinese military intelligence made it very clear in a speech once that North Korea to the Chinese is like lips are to teeth. It keeps us pinned down if they have a little rogue guy running around doing this kind of stuff. The U.S. military, under the capable hands of our commander-in-chief, has recently declared that North Korea is a bigger threat in the region than the Chinese military, which, of course, I think is absolute flapdoodle. The reality of the situation is that they like to use the North Koreans as a foil for essentially a lot of operations that they like to undertake. The nuclear weapons program that the North Koreans have is of Chinese origin. the nuclear weapons program that managed to transition to Pakistan is also of Chinese origin. We know this for a fact because before he was overthrown, Muammar Gaddafi turned out his nuclear program to the West.
Right. He gave it up.
Turned over all of the plans and operations, the facilities that had been developed, including the plans that he obtained from the Pakistanis. Of course, the blueprints were all in Chinese, which should give you a hint.
Mm-hmm.
So the bottom line here is that, yeah, they're going to publicly make noise, and they'll do some minor things which sort of looks like they're going to do something, but they haven't shut off any food, fuel, electricity, or money flow, and they're still working very closely with the North Korean military. A very good example of what Kim Jong-un is doing that the military doesn't like is Bureau 121. Bureau 121 is the North Korean hacker outfit. They're actually being trained inside China by the Chinese 4th and 2nd departments of the Chinese People's Liberation Army. They actually have their headquarters in a Chinese hotel in Shenyang. The Unit 121 has been relatively successful. We know them very well because of the Sony email hack. They also have a feeling that they're going to get a lot more bang for their buck out of a hacker unit than they would if they invested money directly into, say, tanks or airplanes or conventional warfare things. And this is essentially true. There have been hand in hand with this nuclear test and the ballistic missile test, which is what I think their satellite is, quote unquote, you have the North Korean Bureau 121 conducting military exercises against the South. There have been recent reports they've tried to penetrate a couple of the South nuclear power plants. There has been an extensive effort of hacking and email phishing that has essentially spiked in the last 30 days from the North Koreans. So we're watching them very carefully, at least from the cyber warfare side, because there is a general concern of a defense weakness, in particular in power grid and industrial facilities. Absolutely. A lot of the so-called security here in the West is not really security. It's the doors has been left wide open for somebody to be able to demonstrate these kinds of things. The Ukraine hack of their power grid over Christmas was a perfect example of the kind of thing that the North Korean Bureau 121 can execute. Now, we suspect that that one was obviously carried out by the Sophie Group out of Moscow. They waged a campaign called Pawn Storm for the past 3 years and have been relatively successful against the German government, against Ukraine, against Georgia, Lithuania, and other nation states. The specifics are fairly simple. They essentially are sending an email to someone who operates one of these systems, such as an operator at a power plant. And that email contains an Excel spreadsheet with a virus payload.
Jeez.
Which allows the hackers, once you open up the spreadsheet, to obtain control of your computer and work their way into the power system itself.
That's all it takes.
Right. And the specifics in the Ukraine area, we witnessed what's called black energy is the name of the virus. It's actually specifically designed to attack power plants and power grids. The unfortunate thing, and this is something that the South Koreans are very concerned about, is that the software that controls their power grid and power plants, including nuclear power plants, is relatively unsecure from our point of view. And I have to say this is echoed here in the United States. The leading manufacturers and sellers of software that controls the power grid and nuclear power plants and regular power plants here in the U.S. and around the world. It's actually a variant of Windows 95. I am not kidding. All right. It's called WinCC, manufactured by Siemens. One of the things that I know about WinCC is it has an administrator override that is hard-coded in the program, meaning the login and password for a super administrator is actually physically hard-coded in the program and is well known to individuals in the hacking community.
Why do I feel, Charles, that this whole situation with North Korea is not going to end well?
That's probably true, but keep in mind that they play a fine line here. We're going to be really, really violent unless we get payment. How many times have we heard that?
A number of times.
Okay. It goes back to peace in our time when Jimmy Carter returned from North Korea in the 90s after being sent there by the Clintons, waving a piece of paper saying that they have shut down their nuclear program and their missile program.
Sure they did.
Yeah, well, what we've actually seen is Iranian engineers hanging out at the launch site and at the nuclear weapons test site. Gee, I wonder why Tehran happens to be sending some top-level scientific minds to Korea to investigate nuclear and ballistic missile technology. Duh. The Shahab missile systems operated by Iran are virtually identical to the North Korean systems. And with their recent signature on a nice little piece of paper, peace in our time, they can't do those things in country, but somebody who's a naughty boy out there can do it for them, and they can transport the design right on back, have everything all ready to go. Duh. So it's not that these wonderful pieces of paper are not doing anything to stop the proliferation.
Who would you trust more, the Iranians or the North Koreans, or none of the above?
Ooh. You know, that's like saying, all right, I've got a hungry alligator at one side, and I have a hungry polar bear standing on the other side. Which one is nicer? The point being is, these guys are working together, all right, and they're working together for a reason. Most of the stuff is pointed at us, and our political elite believes that we can bump this down a few years down the road. All we have to do is pay them off, send Madeleine Albright over to go dancing with them, something like that, okay?
10 years from now, it's a new ball game, isn't it?
All we're going to see is more and nastier. We will see thermonuclear weapons. We will see a larger arsenal. We will see this stuff proliferate. It will be sold on the open market, which is what's going on. Don't be surprised if a terrorist group gets a hold of a ballistic missile that just happens to have appeared in say, a Libyan port on board a tramp freighter, all right? Hidden underneath tons of concrete.
And ship launched, no doubt.
You see, the North Koreans have a very interesting...
Hold on for a second, Charles. At the top of the hour already. We'll come back, talk more about this. I want to get into more cyber warfare. And, of course, we will open up the phone lines.